Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we're going to be talking to Christopher Black, who has practiced international law in various places of the world, and was the perfect person and guest to be talking about the Meng Wanzhou case, which is starting to take on new dimensions in the past few days. And we're very glad to be talking to Chris. Are you there?
Yeah, hi, Phil. It's very good to be with you again.
Chris, I'll start by just framing this a bit with everyone knows, I think, at this point, and certainly in Canada, the name Meng Wanzhou. She's the financial officer of Huawei, a major company in Canada and around the world, with whom Canada has done good business, had good relations. But in December 2018, December 1st, I believe, she was stopped at the airport. She was transiting to, I believe, Mexico and other countries. And she has been taken into custody because the U.S. said that they wanted to bring charges against her. It's been 2 years. And, of course, the matter is still sitting in a Canadian it's not exactly a courtroom. I'll ask you to explain what it is. The last detail in terms of framing the story, a couple of days ago, the Wall Street Journal said that there are talks going on between the American authorities and the Meng Wanzhou's and herself and her team in Vancouver. And this now is creating a lot of anxiety in Canada. And here's the Toronto Star editorial, and it's on this latest development. It says, "Time to free the two Michaels." And I have a sentence here that I think you would be interested in addressing. It says, this is how they begin the editorial. "The road to resolving the crisis in relations between Canada and China always lay through Washington." Is that a correct way to approach it, do you think? Washington, the way we would resolve our problems, the issue of Meng Wanzhou's being held here, and China, it goes through Washington?
Well, that's the stark reality that Canada is treated as an American province in these foreign diplomatic issues, not a separate country, sovereign country. And it's clear that the Americans have forced this issue on Canada, so they have the keys to the prison, I suppose, in that way. But it's up to Canada can act on its own, doesn't need to go through Washington to clear up this mess. It can just simply release her, for reasons we can discuss later on, but she should be released unilaterally by Canada. We don't need Washington's permission or agreement to do that. Uh-huh. And then they can then discuss the Korvig and Sporver, the other Canadian, the Chinese hold on espionage charges.
Mm-hmm. That element of it has been striking, is that Canada says that the matter of the two Michaels is directly linked in its hostage taking. Right. And the Toronto Star editorial uses the expression, they say China says that it is a coincidence. Actually, they're trying to put words in China's mouth. China did not say it was a coincidence. They say they're holding two Canadians due to espionage, looking into a matter of espionage. Mm-hmm. That they didn't say this is a in between there, that this is a coincidence. What they said was, there are two gentlemen here that we are charging with activity that they said endangered the security of China.
Right.
I notice it's almost pathological how everyone says, well, they're obviously just two innocent people. That may be, we certainly have a presumption of innocence, but no one actually discusses how they would know the degree of innocence the two have.
Right. Yeah, we don't, because the Chinese are being consistent all the way through since Meng's arrest, that the arrest of the two Canadians had nothing to do with it. Whether it did or not, we do not know, but that's what their position officially is. It has no connection whatsoever. And even if Meng was released, they're not going to release those two. That they are going to go proceed with the investigation of those two and perhaps go to trial with it. We don't know how far that will go. One can argue there's a connection in timing, but that is the official Chinese position. So I think they're barking up the wrong tree if they hope if they release Meng, they're going to get those two released, perhaps.
Nobody's agreed to any bargain.
Nobody's agreed to anything.
You notice how, I mean, that really is the position of all the governments involved, which of course should make anyone following it somewhat amused, because politics is written all over this case.
Right.
Tell us, by the way, about this, your take on the United States' decision to charge an individual, not a company, an individual, and hold that individual for something that she did or alleged to have done at a meeting in Hong Kong in 2013. And by the way, when I say individual, we're talking about the daughter of an international company of great import to the country of China, but also to other countries that are involved with that company. I mean, it seems almost to me like an act of piracy to grab an individual, but I'd like your thoughts on it.
Well, yeah, because what they've actually done is literally kidnap, take for hostage this woman, the chief financial officer of Huawei, and the daughter of the founder of Huawei, and who is the founder is a close president of President Xi, I understand. So they've actually taken her hostage, cooked up some legal pretext to hold her, and that's all this is, to put pressure on Huawei and to embarrass China and to try and control Huawei and suppress it as a technological company, because it's obviously far advanced of American and British and Western European companies and in terms of its 5G technology and so on. And it's part of the general attempt to suppress the Chinese economy and stop it from developing any further than it has, for all sorts of reasons, about economics and markets and resources and so on. So they've cooked up this charge against an individual, which is unique because when the Americans have charged companies in the past with violating whatever sanction they have against some targeted enemy country, they've only charged the company and imposed fines on those companies. No executive officer or employee or any executive has ever gone to jail or been charged with criminal offenses because of it. The company has charged itself. So this is unique that she's the first person that they've targeted as an individual. And what was she doing? She was just merely doing her job for Huawei. And what is her crime? The crime they allege is arranging for money to be sent to one company which may help trade with Iran in violation of illegal U.S. sanctions. Now, the word sanctions the American uses to cover up the fact that it's an economic warfare being conducted against Iran by the United States. The embargo they placed, or the sanctions or trade embargoes they've been placed on Iran, are illegal because under the UN Charter, only the Security Council can impose such conditions or economic sanctions on any country. No country can do that unilaterally. So the American laws they purported to
illegal sanction,
right, and imposing sanctions on Iran are void. They don't even exist in law. So there's no legal thing, there's no legal sanctions that anybody would be violating. So even if she had lied to Huawei and hid the fact that they were conducting business with Iran, Huawei can argue in defense, it has no jeopardy because the laws are not binding on Huawei. Huawei can't be fined. It's an American law, it only applies to American citizens inside the United States. American law cannot apply like any other nation's law to any other person outside their own country. So they've cooked up this scheme to, pressure China and Huawei, but also to try and send a message to the rest of the world, do not trade with Iran, because this is what's going to happen to you if you do.
Yeah. We're speaking to Christopher Black, international lawyer. And Chris, there's a mantra that comes from Ottawa, which is the reason we are holding Meng Wanzhou is because of we're practicing following international norms, and we're a rule of law country. But what you just said violates international norms, doesn't it?
Yes, because the UN Charter is part of American domestic law. So the American laws they pass in inflicting sanctions on Iran are illegal under American law. So they don't exist. They're illegal under Canadian law. And so Canada does not have any sanctions against Iran at that time or now, as far as I know. Mm-hmm. And if they did, they would be illegal anyway. So when they made the extradition request, when they had her arrested, and they sent the message to Ottawa to arrest her, they were acting on an illegal warrant based on illegal laws. And the Canadian government had to know that it was done for political reasons, another pressure Huawei to conduct a pressure against China. It was a political arrest, and they knew it when they received the request. And under Article 4 of the extradition treaty, no extradition request has to be acted upon by the requested government, that's Canada, if it's seen to be a political matter. And it obviously was a political matter and is a political matter. Everybody knows that. So Canada could have just said to the United States, we're not going to accept your request. She's free to travel. And that's what their position should be right now. There's no need to call on the Attorney General or anybody else to conduct special processes and special deals. It states it in the treaty. They can let her go immediately.
Yeah. I want to ask about that. I saw this some years, and now it's been some time back, Chrystia Freeland was answering these questions, and she said, well, we're rule of law country. But now we know, don't we, that that UK and Belgium are two rule of law countries, last I heard. Mm. They didn't act on the US request. The US actually, I don't know what the US asked them, but there was already a warrant or a charge against her. Yeah. So is Chrystia Freeland telling us that UK and Belgium are not rule of law countries? And that we can attack on them?
That's another interesting angle to it, that several other countries, it's been reported, were requested by the United States to arrest her when she would transit through their countries, and they refused. So that indicates that Canada has even less of a backbone than those countries do. And we caved in. Why? And the government's not telling us why they did it, why they accepted to do what those two countries refused to do.
Yes.
What pressure was put on them, what promises were made, we do not know, and nobody's telling us. Or they just willingly went along just on a phone call, and because they're so tied in with the American government, that they may just automatically do it without thinking, which is not unlikely.
We're speaking to Christopher Black, who has handled many cases in the ICC, ICTR, and the former Yugoslavia cases, those ad hoc tribunals. And, you know, you put your finger on something which I think Canadians need to be reminded of. All this time now, the discussion has been, well, the Americans made a request. We're simply doing our duty under extradition laws, and because we have these agreements. And they make it as though one Department of Justice was in touch with the other Department of Justice. However, I have a Globe and Mail article written by Robert Fife, December the 6th, in which too bad it isn't Pierre, it'd be much more interesting. Yeah. Justin Trudeau says, we were advised with a few days' notice that this was going to happen.
Mm.
Well, why wouldn't, if it's only to do with the judiciary, why didn't he say, why are you calling me?
Because that's misinformation, because an extradition request is sent by in this case, the United States Department of Justice, through their State Department channels to the Canadian Foreign Ministry. So it goes from, doesn't go through the judiciary, it's a request from one state to another, so it goes through foreign affairs. It's received by the Foreign Affairs Ministry here. And now it has to be reviewed by the head of that ministry in sync with the Attorney General to see if they should go ahead with it. They're both members of cabinet. So this matter was reviewed by the heads of cabinet. Now it had to be reviewed by the heads of those ministries in this case, because Huawei and Meng Wanzhou, even as the arrest and police officers told us in testimony, they were so shocked when they were told to arrest her. They knew that it would have strategic consequences. So the cabinet had to have considered this matter, and Trudeau had to have discussed it with cabinet. I can't imagine that they did not. It doesn't seem real to me.
Certainly,
so they recognized that they had a political matter on their hands, and they decided to go ahead with it. They could have rejected it in that cabinet meeting and said, we're not going to do this. Britain and Belgium have refused. We should refuse too. We're going to antagonize China, and there is no case. It's obviously political. There's no double criminality, which is required under the treaty, because Canada has no sanctions against Iran. So the charges are not what a criminal, they allege in the States, is not criminal in Canada. And to say it's just a fraud charge is a cover, because what's the essence of the fraud? It's breaking the sanctions and deceiving HSBC about those illegal sanctions. So they can't get away with saying that they didn't know anything about it. They couldn't have acted before this went to court, but they could have.
It opens up speculation for all, the Canadians would like to have a strong sovereign government. They'd like to think that, Canada first, you're dealing with a country that calls itself America first. So if a phone call came, and he said it did, he was advised, he had a few days notice. Shouldn't the conversation, and don't you, it's hard to get in their minds, but you have to say, well, if he got a call of that type, what would the conversation like? Because I assume he would say, you realize, do you not, that if we do this, we're going to destroy a trade relations with a country we have good trade relations with and expanding. So you're asking us to blow ourselves up, basically. Right. And then when we do that, you're also asking us to become an adversary. And so that's a high price. I don't care to pay it. But I mean, he makes it as though, well, they told me and I didn't say anything. What is that, a prime minister or is that a vassal?
Yeah, so they're evading the fact, they're trying to hide the fact that they had the right to reject a request when it came in. They're trying to obscure that by being evasive on the issue and saying, oh, well, it's just a conversation. But yeah, what was the conversation? Mm-hmm. Who made the call? Did he discuss it with Trump personally?
Exactly.
And why when Trump made his famous remark that she could be used as a deal breaker or a deal maker in the Chinese negotiations with China, why wasn't she released then when it became quite clear it was obviously political?
Now, by the way, that has been raised. I think her defense team has begun to talk about that. Mm. That has to be one of the strongest possible cases, right? Because political interference certainly would enable a judge or cause a judge to say, this is politics, this is not law.
Right.
I'm going to ask you this. I notice how they're focusing on the Canadian side of the border, but how about the American court itself saying, wait a minute, the president of the United States has now indicated that what we're doing here involves his political issues of trade, and we ourselves will throw the case. You have two courts that really ought to do the right thing.
Yeah, it's not clear to me on where they got this warrant, these charges. They seem to be some sort of grand jury procedure which issued this warrant and these charges. But when I read the charges and they're very vague, and as again, then they're based on illegal laws which about Iran. Otherwise, they couldn't charge anybody. So there is no charge, but I keep repeating that, but it's central to the whole case.
Yeah.
But Canada is not sovereign enough to stand up In this particular case, we've damaged our relations with China. China promises worse to come if she's not released. And the Americans keep putting more pressure on. And now we have these rumors of a plea deal, which is added to the pressure on them.
And again, it's Christopher Black, who's certainly, you've experienced a lot of this business, Chris. Frankly, the American court system, anybody looking at it knows that plea bargaining is the 80% of activity. Right. And that isn't pretty in terms of calling it a justice system and due process and, you know, clear evidence. So they're asking, suggesting what they'll do her a favor of letting her go home. But all she has to say is that she was somehow wrong.
Right.
Talk about that in terms of also in your experience.
Well, yeah, the mechanics of that are not explained to people. First of all, she'd have to be sent to the United States. This is a charge arising out of an American court in an American state. So she would have to enter into a plea deal, she would have to go before a judge in the United States. So she'd have to be sent to the United States. So what they're asking for, that she stops resisting the extradition process and let herself be transferred to the United States before she gets back to China, if she ever does. And once she's in the United States, their attorney general will give her lawyers some documents saying, we assure you that once you get here and you admit certain things, we will talk to the judge and have you arranged to go back to China under certain conditions, if certain conditions are met. Now, there's several aspects to that. First of all, you can't trust them, because we know from our work at the Rwanda Tribunal, the Hague Tribunal, Yugoslav Tribunal, they've made these deals before the Americans and they renege on them. They did the famous one with Prime Minister Kambanda, promised him that if he signed a document admitting to certain things, he would be freed. And he did it, and then was thrown into prison for life without a trial. And he tried to overturn that, was impossible. They did that with several other people.
Yeah. By the way,
they tried to do it with my client. They tried to convince me to plead him guilty if he did certain things and they would let him go, but it never worked out. You can't trust them. So even if you could trust them, she still has to go out of the United States. And once she's in the United States, they can't guarantee that the judge will go along with their deal. She may be hauled in front of a judge and the prosecutor will say, on the behalf of the federal government, we've got to deal with the Canadian government that she signs this document admitting that she did this and this, we'll let her go under these conditions we're going to list here. The judge may say, well, I don't agree with that. If what you say is true, she's a heinous criminal and I want her thrown in prison, we're going to have a trial. Yeah. There's no guarantee that these things are going to, because they can't give such a guarantee without the judge signing off on it. And if you tell me they can go to a judge beforehand, before it's heard in court and get it, then there's something wrong with the judges down there too. Mm-hmm. So how are they going to get her down there? I wouldn't go down there if I was her. I wouldn't trust them as far as you can spit.
No.
And in the conditions, what would they impose? As we know from the French case, the French company recently.
Alstom
had the same sanctions, fines. They were charged with violating the Iran sanctions. And they pleaded guilty and they got a $750 million fine. We can expect the same against Huawei and certain restrictions on Huawei, because this will just not hit her. It'll hit Huawei, it'll be to embarrass China, and it will be to justify the illegal arrest in Canada. It will be used to justify their illegal sanctions against Iran. It'll have all sorts of strategic and political implications. Mm-hmm. So this is not, I can't see this really going forward with anybody with any courage who wants to keep resisting these trials, because you can't trust the Americans to stick to any deal. Yeah. And the ramifications are strategic, so I can't see the Chinese government agreeing to this.
Yeah. No, actually, it appears to be a narrowing of the crisis where the determination on the U.S. side, and that includes Biden, going back to Obama, but now the doomed Biden administration, which is sort of a small version of the Obama, and then Trump. The problems between the the group with this wonderful name, Five Eyes, is actually getting worse. We see Australia. I noticed the Toronto Star editorial is very strong in favor of Australia, whose conduct has been outrageous.
Right.
The Globe and Mail, the Toronto Star, CBC, all quote Australian research institutes which smear China, and it turns out that the Pentagon provides all the money for these quotes research institutes. So we see a worsening. Well, I want to ask you, this seems might be esoteric, but apropos of the conduct of the U.S. and its friends, the Trudeau said days before her arrival here he was advised. So that means somebody's spying on her.
Well, that's a good, yeah, that's an important point you raised.
China.
Obviously, the Americans knew she was going to be traveling through Canada to go somewhere. Otherwise, they wouldn't have approached Canada. So they must be spying on her.
Days ahead of time.
Ahead of time, yeah.
You want to say, well, were we adversarial? What's going on? I mean, again, discretionary power. Boy, it's dangerous stuff. When they use that word discretionary power, you better put your head down.
Right. And again, we got the examples of Milosevic, President Milosevic, when he was being, they were trying to extradite him to the Hague Tribunal in 2000. And the Serbian court refused to do that. The Constitutional Court refused the request. The Americans and the British said to the Serbian Constitutional Court, we don't give a damn. And they put him on an RAF plane and took him in chains to The Hague anyway, even though the country, the courts had said, you can't do that. They don't care about the law, never have. This whole thing about Canada being a rule of law country is a crock of nonsense. Mm-hmm. And well, they proved that since they attacked Yugoslavia. I mean, we can go on and on about the so-called laws they adhere to, which they've broken constantly.
Yeah. We know in the case of Mr. Gbagbo,
yes,
in Ivory Coast.
That's another one. That's right.
United Nations itself, together with France, a Western power, seized him and took him to The Hague.
Yes.
I don't think they even went through a courtroom in Ivory Coast. They just grabbed him.
They just grabbed him. And then he spent years in prison, and even when judges ordered him released, because there was no case whatsoever against, it was all fabricated, everybody knew it, he was still kept in prison. They're still trying to keep him back and put him back in prison. Now, is that the whole international tribunal system, international criminal justice system has been hijacked and co-opted and used by the imperial powers to create all sorts of injustice to advance their agenda.
Yeah.
And this is one element of that.
We're speaking to Christopher Black, a criminal lawyer, and who's been, of course, at the Hague and argued cases in Arusha, and is quite familiar with the process that we're watching now with Meng Wanzhou. Chris, an element here that I guess we should also return to is the Wall Street Journal article, which has got everybody talking now the past few days. Mm-hmm. But once again, it seems to me that our journalism is not major journals, New York Times, Washington Post, Wall Street Journal, Toronto Star Globe. They get people talking about things when they don't provide us with any kind of adequate detail to know whether this is what this is. I mean, this story about negotiations is all based on, first of all, we have the magic word, it's leaked. So who's leaking on us that we're not told who the leaker is? And they say sources, and then you go to the sources and all of them say, we're not saying anything about anything. So everyone is chattering without any substance.
Right. And the spin put on by the press, I noticed yesterday and today, is that they're claiming that Meng is considering this option. There's no sign of that whatsoever. But they did the same thing with other prisoners at The Hague and the Rwanda tribunals, put out press releases indicating things were other than what they are. I remember they put out the New York Times put out stories that President Milosevic was depressed and would commit suicide in prison. And he had to write letters and make public statements saying that he's not depressed and would never commit suicide. If anything happens to him in prison, he would be murdered. And that's what happened to him in 2006. He was murdered. But they were trying to cover that ahead of time by putting out fake stories that he would kill himself. And that's the attack. When he died, they tried to allege that he had poisoned himself or taken something. So now we have another situation where they're using the media to make it look like China and Meng admit that they're wrong in some way. They're just being obstinate and resisting, facing facts. But really, the whole world knows they're guilty. And that's the whole tone of this, the press coverage. It's to undermine the defense, undermine her, undermine China, and add to the propaganda against them that they're obviously guilty. They're just too stupid or too obstinate to face reality. And that's all. So it's propaganda we're dealing with. That's why they don't give us the details and the true background so people can judge what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Again, it's this is Christopher Black. And Christopher, the Star has, I noticed, picked out a subject. And again, it shows, to my mind, the decline of Canadian sovereignty, because now the Star is enthusiastic about going down this very dangerous road. They say that, prominent Canadians have spoken about this and urged the government to release Meng Wanzhou, because the government does have the power to do that. But they said, and then they said parenthetically, some of them with business relations with China. It's turning this into, are you pro-China? It's, in other words, it's demonization,
right?
Drawing lines, and here in this case, they basically refer to the lead names on that petition as Jean Chrétien retreads or something. In other words, the old Chrétien school, which actually had a degree of Canadian independence. Also, we know the name Pierre Trudeau. There, whatever the material basis of that was, it was a foreign policy that put a little distance between Washington and Ottawa. But the Star, which had always advertises itself as a nationalist paper, now is beginning to ridicule those who want to see a more sovereign, independent approach.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, the Star is a liberal paper, so it supports the current administration in Ottawa, I guess. But the sad fact is that since I would say when Canada attacked Yugoslavia, bombed a European country in 1999, that was the final slide of Canada into a situation where, in terms of foreign policy, it is just a province considered by the Americans as a province of the United States. And in Britain even considers it so. I mean, the British embassy no longer fills out, issues passports in Ottawa. You have to go to get a British passport. If you're living in Canada, you're a British subject like me, you can't get one unless you go to Washington to get it. Because that it's considered obviously part of the United States. The British embassy there handles it. We've lost all sorts. Any semblance of sovereignty in our decisions, foreign policy, we're tied in by NATO, we're tied in by the Five Eyes Agreement, we're tied into advancing American interests using Canadian money, Canadian armed forces, and Canadian resources to advance American interests. Mm-hmm. There's no benefit to ourselves that I can see. Some companies may get some benefit in the United States, but the amount of losses being incurred through loss of trade with China and what's going to come, because I think it's going to get a lot worse, is immense. So we have people in Ottawa, in actually all the main political parties, who have no sense of sovereignty of Canada, no nationalist patriotic sense whatsoever that I can see.
No, the Green
they can't sit in patriots whatsoever. They're doing everything they can to advance American interests against Canadian interests.
Yes.
And there's a word for that.
Yeah. I think it was vassal was one of them.
Yeah, vassal is one of them.
I don't know, I think you and I have remarked before, I try to remind everybody, when this crisis first broke, they had one or two Canadian scholars invited to talk on the media, mainstream television, and a couple of them said, are we a vassal? This seems like the behavior of a vassal. And I have not heard the word vassal since. It's like the decision with don't ever invite that guy back. Don't let him use that word.
No.
But let's talk about isolation. We'll try to wrap up here. I really wanted to get your thoughts on this. One of the ways they pride themselves, particularly Chrystia Freeland has done a lot of this, is that, well, you know, we're with international law and we're law and order country or law, rule of law country. They like to use the word international community. Mm-hmm. But in fact, every time there's a vote now at the United Nations, practically every subject, Canada is not part of the international community. They're a member of the Anglo-American alliance of a small group of white countries.
That's right.
The rest of the world. The rest of the world is not enthusiastic about Canada's position with Meng Wanzhou. I'm sure they're amused.
Yeah, the Americans use that term international community as a euphemism for themselves and their allies. That's it. It doesn't mean the actual world community is against what the United States is doing. And Canada is now in the embarrassing and tragic position of being a flunky for a bullying power. We're looked at around the rest of the world as just a flunky for a bully. And if you go to Russia and China, I mean, people don't take Canada seriously for that reason, because, you know, you want to see what Canada's view is, ask Washington.
Yeah.
Well, this why should we treat with Canada?
This incident has exposed that.
Yes. And where is that advanced Canadian interests? It's not the right thing to do. It's not just, it's illegal. And as far as rule of law, as you say, Canada broke international law by bombing Yugoslavia, by bombing Libya, by bombing, attacking, and being involved in wars in Iraq and Syria. Mm-hmm. And the egregious case of Canadian Special Forces assisting the United States Marines in putting a gun to President Aristide's head in Haiti and to kidnap him and put him on a plane and send him in chains to Africa.
That's a very important.
He was duly elected. That's what Canada did. That's so much for the law of Canadian law.
Special rendition of a sitting president of a country.
President.
In our
And I had to use Canadian Special Forces because they spoke French and the American forces don't. So they needed Canadians involved in that kidnapping and overthrow of that government. So anytime these people come out, oh, Canada's a rule, it's just so much sanctimonious, smug humbuggery and hypocrisy. It's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, I think that's a lovely place to end, Chris. Thank you. We're very appreciative. Particularly of your great work in international law. Christopher Black, thank you very much.
Thank you, Phil, for having me.